Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. Coming up on today's show, investigative journalist Jordan Cheriton from Status Quo News is going to tell us about his recent trip through Florida and how Ron DeSantis, our Republican governor here, is sending this state straight to hell in more ways than one. We'll also be speaking with investigative reporter Alex Koch about how the climate change denial funders are skirting accountability by sending money through various different nonprofit organizations to muddy the waters about how humans are destroying the planet. And of course, we can't not talk about Madison Cawthorn's claims of drug-fueled sex parties among Republicans in Washington, D.C., so we'll bring you all of the latest developments with that. And don't forget, if you want the full show every single week, become a member. You can go to ROFpodcast.com to sign up, and you can catch Ring of Fire 7 days a week on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. The state of Florida right now seems to encapsulate everything horrible happening throughout really the entire United States. The attacks on the LGBTQ plus community, the economic problems that average Americans are suffering from every day, creeping authoritarianism, all of it right here in the state of Florida and, of course, elsewhere throughout the country. But we here, we're kind of getting it a little bit harder than everybody else. And recently, Jordan Cheriton actually took a trip through this state interviewing people, talking about all of these issues. And Jordan Cheriton with Status Quo News is here with me right now to talk about that journey. So, Jordan, thank you for coming back on the show. I've watched the videos you've put out. Just kind of in a broad sense, lay out what brought you to Florida in the first place.
Yeah, I actually went to school in Tampa, so I've kind of kept a close eye on things in Florida. And, you know, to me, I've seen a lot of the culture war coverage out there, but not a lot of connections to the economics. Because in my view, all these culture war distractions, which are actually hurting real people like LGBTQ people, are just smokescreens to numb the masses to, in Florida, rent is going up 30 to 50%. Inflation in Florida is above the national average. And these things are not just unique to Florida. But to me, basically, Governor DeSantis has been weaponizing fake issues for his, you know, obviously presidential ambitions, but to also just distract from the economic hunger games going on in places like Florida. So I thought it important to go interview the LGBTQ community that's going to be affected by the Don't Say Gay bill, which he just signed, and other issues, including the housing crisis in Florida.
Well, yeah, because, you know, you make a really good point here. We do have all of these culture war issues happening here in the state of Florida and, of course, elsewhere. You know, this is not just to say Florida's the only place, but, you know, also the attacks on critical race theory, you know, the legislation banning that from places where it never even happened to begin with, the LGBTQ attacks, other attacks on teachers, you know, now claiming anybody who opposes these kinds of things, they're groomers. But all of it masks the deep problems that are happening with the residents here in Florida. And the rent issue, right? The housing price issue is something that I do, you know, luckily see some people bringing up every time Ron DeSantis sends out a tweet. You know, people will comment, not many, but some of them say, hey, rent went up 30%. What are you doing about this? And there's, of course, never a response to it because all he's doing is showboating. Like, look at me addressing these issues that aren't actually issues instead of looking at the absolute descent into, you know, hell that the economy here in Florida really is heading to. And that's where we are. That's what we're looking at here. I mean, people are suffering both from the legislation and just from horrible economic policies that are wrecking the state right now.
Absolutely. And people should remember, Florida got hit, one of the hardest states, by the financial crash. It was kind of ground zero for the foreclosure crisis over a decade ago. You know, the narrative has been we've recovered from that. But people I spoke with Florida have never fully recovered from the housing crisis, the financial crash. Then you add in a pandemic, and now you're adding in gas, food, Florida becoming Wall Street's Disney World. 60 Minutes, I was surprised, had a recent piece about Wall Street basically buying up all these houses, cash offers as soon as the houses get listed from Wall Street investors. And then, you know, they throw in $10,000 to $15,000 in remodeling and then jack up the prices 40-50%. So all of these things are happening. And frankly, a lot of people look to Florida to move there because, you know, no state income tax, lower taxes. But people I spoke with who said that's part of why they moved there, including the weather, are now talking about we gotta find somewhere else because we're getting priced out of here. And then, you know, you just look at it. Frankly, Ron DeSantis is using LGBTQ students as basically collateral damage to push his agenda. I mean, I interviewed some LGBTQ high school students down there. And make no mistake, this does not just affect kindergarten through third grade. That's the conservative line. There's language in the bill that's very vague, says or, you know, deemed age appropriate, which could extend to any age schooling as far as what topics could be discussed, taught as far as LGBTQ. But students were telling me literally we're all on antidepressants and a lot of us are suicidal. That's before this Don't Say Gay bill. And now adding on to that, them being afraid of, you know, discussing their same sex parents. So not afraid to discuss their family in school. Two people that are LGBTQ I interviewed are basically homeless. They're couch surfing because their families won't accept them. And now school was the one place that they felt safe to be themselves. But now in school, they're essentially going to be, you know, spiritually homeless because they can't just be themselves and they have to walk on eggshells. What can be discussed? So all of these things together, the economic pain and then essentially the target on oppressed communities, Black people included, is basically a mass distraction to what I'm calling the economic hunger games. Biden could call this a historic economic recovery, but I'm talking to people down there. They're facing eviction. I'm talking, you know, the LGBTQ students who they too care about housing and other things. They actually criticize the Republican Party, but they also criticize the Democrats for not fighting hard enough and emboldening the Republicans with this culture war stuff. So, yeah, there was a lot of different issues we covered while down there.
You know, you just brought up an interesting point, and I've mentioned this in some of my segments, too. This administration is telling us every single month, especially when we get the new jobs number, like, oh, my God, a million jobs here. Half a million, I think, is what we have at the end of the March jobs report, you know, preliminary reports coming out. They tell us it's the biggest economic recovery we've ever seen in this country. Everything is great. People are doing better than ever. And the response to that is actually no. No, they're not. On paper, sure. On paper, things look good. It looks like we have a ton of jobs. It looks like the unemployment rate is going down. Wall Street is doing phenomenal. But Wall Street's not the economy. The economy is actually the people out there, the people you are talking to, not just here in Florida, but all of the other times you and I have talked. It's usually after you've been, you know, up to Flint, Michigan, or traveling through the country, talking to real people. And they're telling you, we're not okay. You know, where are these jobs they're talking about? Oh, and I did get one of those jobs, but it still can't pay the bills. Things are not great, and I'm sick and tired of hearing this administration try to force these talking points, convincing us everything is great when we can look around us and see for ourselves that no, it definitely is not.
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing something journalistically radical these days, and that's just talking to real people. I started an economic Hunger Games series. I can't tell you how many people have reached out to me. First interview I did was with a senior citizen who is literally suicidal because her rent just went up $800 and she's about to be homeless, has no family to go to. Her daughter recently died. $800 increase for a senior citizen. Another interview with a senior who is literally eating rice and beans half the time to afford rent. I just did an interview with somebody. This is happening a lot where people who got rental relief are now getting letters in the mail that they have to pay it back. for some bureaucratic incompetence on the government's part. One person breaking down that they have to pay $9,000 back while they have medical bills due to muscular dystrophy. I mean, these are just three interviews. And also, while I was on this trip in Florida, I interviewed folks from the St. Petersburg and Tampa Bay Tenants Union. They're literally telling me pretty much all day they have people reaching out to them that they just got a letter that they're going to be evicted in a couple weeks, if not a month, due to their apartment condos being bought up and sold to the highest bidder, or you know, fake nuisance violations. So there is really, I don't think it's too dramatic to say there's a real kind of economic hunger games going on that's being dressed up as a historic economy. And this happens when Republicans are in power, Democrats, they dress up GDP increase, unemployment number, the stock market. When if you look at most of the jobs that have come back during this pandemic, most of them are low wage jobs. A lot of them, 40 to 50% are in the hospitality industry. No disrespect to anyone who works in that industry, but they're not rolling in it. They're living paycheck to paycheck. So they're just basically throwing out artificial numbers, which the media then breathlessly cheerleads for. But the real people out there, I mean, if you go out on the road and speak with people, you will find out real quick. It's historically bad for most people.
And those service industry jobs, obviously, those were some of the first to go during the pandemic. Because, yeah, what shut down the most? Tourism and restaurants, you know, bars and restaurants. So, yes, obviously, as things reopen, those jobs come back. So that gets added into these numbers of, oh, look how great we're doing. Yeah, but you're paying these people technically $2.13 an hour. You know,
right.
They have to rely on goodwill from their customers. And yes, believe it or not, you know, as somebody who spent years in the restaurant industry, there's plenty of people that actually don't tip. And so you do get $2.13 per hour when something like that happens. And so, yeah, that's not sustainable. These people, it's not just living paycheck to paycheck. Some of them live day to day. You know, if I don't make enough tips today, I don't have enough to go through until tomorrow. I can't fill up with gas tomorrow, which, of course, is also becoming a huge issue with the price of gas. And so what are they proposing? They're saying, well, let's give you a gas tax holiday. Let's take 14 cents off the cost of a gallon of gas, which, of course, that money actually goes to pay for infrastructure. So let's rob Peter to save you $2 every time you fill up. The solutions are beyond stupid right now that we see. And I just, it blows my mind that anybody can sit there and believe for a second that things are going well right now in this country.
Right. And, you know, in Florida, Ron DeSantis, major tax breaks to corporations, wealthy people. While, you know, I guess his economic plan for working people is to, you know, block, talk about LGBTQ issues in schools, not to mention the Stop Woke Act, which is trying to, avoid, white students or white people in, at jobs from feeling guilty. I mean, it really is a fantasy land, what's going on. And, you know, at the end of the day, the more people I speak with, they're even telling me, you know, to the age old question, well, why don't you move? Because the places I would look that were cheaper in the past, the same things are going on with rent going up, all these things. And, you know, one common thing I heard, including from the LGBTQ students, is, yeah, obviously, the Republicans, DeSantis are awful, but they called out the Democratic Party for basically, you know, being nice on the culture war issues, but essentially doing nothing else, offering nothing bold on the economic side, which is basically letting the culture war stuff dominate. And, you know, one progressive lawmaker, Anna Ascomani, I spoke with, who's in Orlando, she told me, literally, we helped get a tax credit for working families, but the Democratic Party in Florida will not brag about it. Because their donors don't like it. So they're not bragging about it because the donors don't like it. So, yeah, I mean, it's a tough situation. And I'm going to keep covering it. You know, it's not the sexy stuff that go viral on YouTube, but this is what's really going on. People could check out the interviews I'm doing from Florida and elsewhere on our YouTube channel at Status Coup.
And I do, by the way, encourage everybody to go do that. These are phenomenal voices that you're hearing in these videos because it's real people. You know, this is not somebody that gets paid the big bucks to go out there and tell you everything is fine and rosy. These are the people that are going through these hardships that we do sit and talk about every single day. You know, putting a human face on it is hugely impactful. And it's great that you're out there doing this. Of course, it is unfortunate that these are not, you know, the videos that are getting 300,000-400,000 views, because they should be. Same thing with, you know, climate change videos. I always joke when I do climate change videos, you know, with my producers saying, okay, well, here goes our traffic for the day. Sure. Because people don't care about things that actually matter. They would rather sit and talk for a week about Will Smith slapping Chris Rock. You know, that's news. That's totally something we have to cover. But people are suffering. Things are getting bad. You know, Biden's approval rating is obviously in the toilet because of these things. And far too many on the left, closer to the center left, by the way, they want to pretend that no, everything's fine. The only problem is the Republicans. The only problem is people like Trump and Ron DeSantis and Marjorie Taylor Greene. Sure, they're problems, but getting rid of those people doesn't solve any of the suffering that most people are experiencing right now. You know, sure, it's great to get rid of them. We don't want them back. But then what do we do to help people? We're stuck at the mercy of Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, and then we still get nothing in return. So people's lives still suck. We just don't have to deal with, you know, Matt Gaetz in the future, maybe.
Right. And you know what? They could say Manchin and Sinema all they want. Biden's had every opportunity to use the bully pulpit.
Yep.
To shame these people. Manchin's daughter broke the law by price gouging on insulin as the CEO of a pharmaceutical company. Could have done some backroom threats there. You know, my DOJ might take a look at this. So I don't really, you know, I don't prescribe to it's just Manchin and Sinema. Biden and the Democrats were not going to fight for these things, because at the same time, they're trying to raise a lot of money for the midterms, and the people they need to raise money from don't want most of these provisions from Build Back Better. So that's the country we live in. That's what the flag is, the United Corporations of America. And I think sometimes even as a journalist, you know, I'm first a human. It's frustrating and disheartening when I'm on the road. Sometimes you feel like you're kind of spinning your wheels, or it's Groundhog's Day. Nothing's changing. But you know, when I get the comments from viewers and the feedback of thank you for covering this and, you know, staying in the fight, that's what keeps me going, because it's important to show the real stories that, frankly, you know, the corporate media is covering up most of these things, because the corporate media, local and national, they'll cover the Don't Say Gay bill. They'll cover the culture war stuff excessively because it's, you know, sensational and conflict driven. They'll kind of cover skyrocketing housing and rent. They won't really cover these landlords evicting people, you know, every day. So, we're going to continue covering these things, because it's vitally important that we know, yeah, the economy is great for some people, but not working people.
And, you know, you and I have been doing this long enough. We understand, too, what happens in situations like this. As we continue to watch these housing prices continue to skyrocket, as we watch these new apartment buildings being built that are so expensive nobody can afford them, we all know what happens next. Maybe it's 6 months, maybe it's 2 years down the road, but the crash comes. The crash always comes. You cannot escape that. When you price everybody out of the market except for the ultra rich, well, we have a lot of rich people here in the United States, but not enough to sustain that entire industry. And the crash comes. A lot of people lose a lot of money. And then, of course, come the corporate bailouts. Let's fix you up. We know that your hedge fund put all this money into real estate and now it's worth next to nothing. So let's take care of you, because much like war, there's always money to help out these industries when they're in trouble. But right now, we can't even get Democrats to agree on sending a $100 gas card to people each month. Right? That's literally what they're debating right now. Like, could we send them $100 in a, you know, Visa gas card, I guess, which, of course, only benefits the fossil fuel companies. But that's the relief we may get, $100 a month, you know, right before the election, which is exceptionally transparent as to why they're even talking about it right now.
Absolutely. You hit it spot on. And, you know, at a certain point, even, you know, Democrats running campaigns, you know, but Trump and January 6th, and, you know, this is the most important election of our lifetime, which we hear every 2 to 4 years. I think they're going to start even losing some of the neoliberals, because at a certain point, even neoliberals are feeling the squeeze, and it's not enough just to be what you're opposed to. If you're basically coming up with every excuse in the book not to do anything real on the climate inferno, on skyrocketing housing rent, healthcare, we're still in a pandemic despite the media's narrative that it's over.
Yeah.
I mean, and at the end of the day, this is how fascism grows. When you don't have an alternative, when people are economically destitute and afraid, they are susceptible to charlatans and dangerous people. And I think a lot of what we're seeing is that.
It absolutely is. And, you know, this is a warning sign for the Democratic Party. You know, you don't want to get walloped in the midterms. The polls are already showing that it's probably going to happen. But there's simple things they could do. I mean, first and foremost, the student loan debt forgiveness. Not only is that a winning political issue for them, so just politics alone, that's the smartest decision. But economically speaking, you know, what do the numbers say? What is it, between $86 billion and $110 billion that forgiveness puts back into the economy every year? So literally, where's the downside to that? You know, where's the downside of doing something that alleviates financial stress on working people and benefits the economy and benefits your political campaign? It you know, sounds simplistic to say this, but it's very stupid to not do that, because it's a win-win-win situation, and they still can't even take that easy victory that is laying right there in front of them.
Well, at the end of the day, we live in the United Corporations of America, and they might strategically know that's the easy way, that would be strategically wise, but they're all bought off, and their donors don't want them to. I mean, hell, real estate developers are literally sitting on city councils around the country, I'm finding out. No wonder we have an eviction crisis. You have, you know, Antarctica is 70 degrees above average temperature right now. But we can't even get $500 billion in the climate, for climate, when experts say we need about $5 to $10 trillion right now for climate proposals. I mean, the list goes on and on. And at the end of the day, unfortunately, it's going to come down to when the wealthy start having their houses submerged or burned in fires, or, you know, or something actually affects them. Then you'll start seeing political change, but not a minute before that, unfortunately.
Absolutely. All right. So, Jordan, what's next? You've always got a project on the horizon. I know you've got the Economic Hunger Games series that you're working with right now. So what else do you have out there? And, well, you know, what's on the agenda for you?
Yeah. So I also yesterday was live at Amazon Staten Island warehouse. Speaking of topics that don't do well on YouTube, it's like the word Amazon suddenly gets flagged. So I was live because the union election, today is the last day of the union election. So I was out there interviewing workers who are organizing. So I'm going to be following that very closely. If those workers successfully unionize at Amazon, that's going to be a seismic tidal wave for the working class. We saw what happened with Starbucks as far as them winning, and now nearly 200 Starbucks have filed for a union. I would suspect the same thing, if not more, will happen with Amazon. I also plan on going back to Flint. It is now heading to be the 8-year anniversary in April. And now they're actually messing around with the water in Flint again, 8 years later. And of course, no one's been convicted. So we're going to stay on that, probably head over there in late April. So there's some things in the works, but mainly I just encourage your viewers, subscribe to Status Quo. They make it very hard. A lot of my viewers aren't getting notifications, aren't seeing the videos. So definitely subscribe to Status Quo, and you could on YouTube, COUP, and you could also get on our text list, statusquo.com/text, where you'll get a text when we're live, which helps get around kind of the YouTube suppression.
Well, Jordan, anytime you want to come back on the show, you're always welcome here. You do such phenomenal work. So thank you for everything you've done. Thank you for everything you're going to do. And let's stay in touch.
Absolutely. Thanks for the opportunity.
Climate change is likely the biggest threat that humanity as a whole currently faces. And we've actually known about this for decades now. But unfortunately, fossil fuel industries have known about it for a little bit longer than the general public. And that's given them a leg up, I guess you could say, in terms of crafting the narratives around climate change. But they're not alone. They've got lots of money pouring in, millions of dollars a year, to fund misinformation. And I'm joined now by investigative reporter Alex Koch. He's with Exposed by CMD, and he's also the co-founder of the Opt Out app, which we will talk more about in just a little bit. But Alex, thank you for joining me. You've got a wonderful new report out, The Dirty Dozen, about climate change denial and all the money flooding into this. So start at the top, man. This is a pretty big report that we've have here.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for having me on, and big fan of Ring of Fire. So yes, at the Center for Media and Democracy, we published recently my report on the top, or the Dirty Dozen, nonprofit funders of climate misinformation. So as you said, you know, oil giants have for a long time been misinforming the public about climate change and its causes and its effects. But there's also a lot of nonprofit groups, which include right-wing family foundations, ideological funds, and then also mainstream donor advised fund sponsors, which are essentially money managers connected to big investment firms like Fidelity and Vanguard, that are also funding these climate misinformation groups. So I looked at eight groups that are primarily in the business of climate misinformation. There are other groups that also do a lot of that, but do many other things as well. So I wanted to limit this by organizations like the Heartland Institute, the Competitive Enterprise Institute, the Property and Environmental Research Center. These are, you know, quite conservative think tanks that are mostly concerned with misinforming the public about climate change and the environment, and get funding from folks in the fossil fuel industry, such as Koch Industries CEO Charles Koch. And so I found a number of donors who have given millions of dollars from 2014 to 2020 to these climate misinformation organizations.
And I believe it was the Heartland Institute that several years ago, well, actually many years ago at this point, they were running the big billboards that had Charles Manson's face on them that said, "I still believe in climate change, do you?" I think that was Heartland. Maybe I'm mistaken about that. But either way, that's the kind of level of misinformation, not just trying to say that, oh, well, the science isn't sure, but literally trying to say, if you believe in climate change, you're like this murderer. I mean, that is some of the more extreme, you know, climate denial, climate misinformation that we have seen within the last 10 years. But it certainly isn't all of it. And when we look at all of these scientific studies, hell, when we look at, you know, patterns right now with the Arctic, or Antarctic, excuse me, 70 degrees on average warmer than usual right now, ice sheets breaking off, we see climate change, okay? We don't even really need more studies on this, because we can open our doors and our windows and, oh my God, it's here. And so their misinformation campaigns have been strong enough, unfortunately, to fight back what we see with our own eyes. And that to me is just absolutely astounding. We see the effects, we see these extreme weather patterns, and yet this money has bought the loyalty of just enough people to make sure nothing ever happens in the United States to actually address these issues.
It is remarkable that we are watching ourselves destroy the planet that we live on. And we have people with billions of dollars in their accounts who are funding misinformation to actually not only perpetuate this system that is dooming our planet and possibly our species, but are actually trying to make it worse, to accelerate climate change. One of the organizations I looked at was the CO2 Coalition, which, as you can tell, is actually a pro-carbon group. I'm actually telling you the truth. They claim that more carbon is actually beneficial for the planet. I mean, this is how bonkers some of this misinformation and climate denial is. And then when Donald Trump became president, he brought in a top leader of the CO2 Coalition, William Happer, who is now currently back at CO2 Coalition as the chairman, into his administration. And so this is a guy who received thousands of dollars directly from Peabody Energy, which is a giant, the biggest coal company, in America, as far as I know, in exchange for, testimony that he gave, that the earth is experiencing a carbon dioxide famine and would benefit from even more greenhouse gas emissions. So, you know, billionaires like Charles Koch, Robert Mercer's family foundation, a lot of classic right-wing family foundations like the Sorrel Freedom Trust, and the Sarah Scape Foundation, they're funding these organizations that are, you know, issuing just absolute garbage into our discourse. And sadly, there's a lot of people who aren't considered on the right wing who are also propping up fossil fuels, lying to the public about clean coal and about natural gas being a safe energy source, many of whom accept PAC donations from fossil fuel companies into their campaigns. So this is not a only right-wing problem, but what I looked at was mainly right-wing organizations that are funded by nonprofits I could identify.
And a lot of people do think, okay, well, obviously the climate misinformation is only coming from your Exxons and Chevrons and BPs, but it is a very sophisticated and complicated web of funding that takes place with these groups. You know, all of these various foundations that you mention, a lot of them are also, once you start digging, okay, well, they're funded in part by these other foundations. You have to do so much digging to really get to the bottom of these things, because it almost feels like a very legal, I will say, form of money laundering with what happens, not just with the climate misinformation, but with all of these weird little right-wing foundations. Because everybody does fund everybody else. There's money changing hands constantly here. And again, not saying there's anything illegal about it, but it makes it very hard to trace what comes from what. And I spent, you know, 10 years working for DeSmog Blog. And, you know, this was one of the things we did. We went out there to refute all of the climate misinformation out there. And there were still groups that we struggled to really truly track the funding because of how obscure they make everything by basically just having it change hands nonstop.
Yeah, and by the way, I used to write for DeSmog, so a big fan of their work. And that's cool that you were there. But yes, what we do at Center for Media and Democracy, much like the folks at DeSmog and Sludge and other organizations that look at climate misinformation funding is we look at tax records. But as you allude to, the nonprofits in America are not required to disclose their donors. So you sort of have to reverse engineer the process by looking at potential funders, looking at their tax records, because nonprofits do have to disclose where they give their money, the grants that they give. So by doing kind of reverse engineering, you can figure out, at least here are the nonprofits whose tax records we can obtain who have given money to this organization and this organization over a certain time period. But to make matters even more confusing are the donor advice fund sponsors. So the latest trend in philanthropy is for wealthy folks to create donor advice funds. That's essentially their own fund that a fund manager, such as Fidelity Charitable or Vanguard Charitable or National Philanthropic Trust, all of whom are in the Dirty Dozen climate misinformation funders. These organizations manage their money, and then the donors who create the funds advise these organizations where the money should go. So if it's, as long as it's a 501c3 nonprofit that is in good standing with the IRS, as in the IRS is not investigating them for some kind of fraud or something, these large groups like Fidelity and Vanguard will give the money to those nonprofits. Unfortunately, some of these nonprofits are climate denial organizations, and some are actually white nationalist hate groups, which is also a topic I've reported on a lot, following the money there. So essentially what happens when you set up your donor advised fund, you get a double tax break. So you give the money to your fund, and that counts, according to the IRS, as a charitable donation, even though you haven't actually given that money to another charity. You're just putting it into your fund. And then you also can transfer appreciable assets into that fund of yours without taxes. So stocks, land, things like that, that can increase their value over time, you would normally get charged a pretty significant tax on the way out. This way you can transfer it without taxes. So you're getting a double tax break. And then on top of that, you have the ability to anonymize your name. Your name is not traced to those donations unless you want it to be, because, you know, whether it's Donors Trust, which is a right-wing donor advised fund sponsor, or it's Fidelity Charitable or Vanguard Charitable, again, which are both tied to the financial institutions of the same name, but not legally connected, these anonymize the name. So I think people who are funding the most sort of notorious causes today, climate change denial, white nationalist hate, you know, anti-Muslim hate, things like that, are happy to use their donor advised funds, get the tax breaks, and also not be publicly identified as donating to these entities. So what we can do is we can look who's giving money to Fidelity Charitable and where is Fidelity Charitable giving their money, but we don't know of the donors to Fidelity who is actually giving the money to the CO2 Coalition or to the Heartland Institute. So we kind of have to just take that, add it to what we know is coming from directly from foundations, other foundations, and you know, do reports like what I did.
Well, yeah, and the big problem with that too is that there's not many people willing to do what you do. I mean, that's the problem, and that's the thing we have to be very honest about, and that's a huge failure, obviously, of the media, is that you do this. You know, I actually just spoke to Jordan Cheriton. He's still out there. He does things like this. There's a handful of others, but there's not enough. And this used to be pretty much what journalism meant. But now journalism is anybody who, you know, sticks themselves in front of a camera and gives their opinion on news of the day. That's what we consider journalists. No, that's not. That's just everybody trying to, you know, be on YouTube. What you do here is so valuable. This report that you and CMD have put together based on, you know, this IPCC information that has come out, this is so valuable. And this leads me to another thing I want to talk to you about, is the fact that media is terrible. It's hard to find good, real stories. But you and Walker Bragman have created a project. And actually, I think I spoke to you about 2 years ago about this when it had just launched. And it's come a very long way since then. A lot of new members. And of course, I'm talking about Opt Out. So tell us about Opt Out and where we're at with it right now.
Yeah, well, I'm so glad you brought that up. I'll just say, first of all, that I'm lucky that I work for an organization, the Center for Media and Democracy, that allows us, our small staff, to take the time to do that deep digging that a lot of for-profit media companies don't allow their reporters to do because of shareholder demands or quick hit quotas and things like that. So I am fortunate to be somewhere that allows us that time. And I think a lot of organizations also do that, but not enough. So what Opt Out is a network of over 120 independent news outlets. So these are financially independent news outlets that don't have financial entanglements with major corporations or advertisers, that are uncompromising in their reporting and their analysis, and are trustworthy, again, because we have looked through their reporting, but also because they're not beholden to corporate interests. So this includes outlets, of course, like Ring of Fire. You're one of the first video and radio outlets to join the network. And yes, you were also our first public interview, as far as I recall, when we first announced the project. And that was back in the fall of 2020, when we put together a newsletter and started working with the Progressive Coders Network, which is a group of tech activists who now, you know, working with us, have created this highly sophisticated news app that aggregates content from, you know, video channels like yours, podcasts like yours, and digital websites and magazines. And so the app is curated. Not only is it led by journalists like myself, but it's actually curated by journalists too. So there's no algorithms that are determining the content you see and the order in which you see it. It's actual individuals who are going through and selecting content that we think is most important of the day. Multiple times a day, we're doing this. And you also have the ability to create your own personal feed by following the news outlets and the journalists themselves that you like. So this really is kind of by journalists, with the health of the independent media community in mind, with the long-term goal, of course, of educating the public and opening people's eyes up more to the issues that really matter, like climate change, like labor rights, like women's rights, like economic, social, and racial justice, things like that, that all, often the corporate and legacy media overlook or kind of mischaracterize or don't fully understand. And I think that it's really important that people check out our app and just see what you think. You know, there's a lot you might like, there's a lot that you might not, but we can tell you that, you know, these are vetted outlets that are fully independent. And that's something that, you know, as small outlets like mine, like yours, you know, we need to band together in some way in order to sort of take on the dominant corporate media narrative to generally dictate our news cycle. So we just launched the iOS version for Apple on iPhone and iPad a few weeks ago. You can find that opt-out news in the App Store. And we're getting ready to release the beta version of the Android, so we'll have it for both major phone operating systems.
And I've pulled the app up right here. And just right here, you know, off the top, you've got news outlets, Translash, Injustice Watch, Drilled, NC Policy Watch, The Nomiki Show, The Real News, Podside Picnic, Foreign Exchanges. There's Ring of Fire right there, too. Means Morning News. I mean, The Humanist Report. It goes on and on. And I love it because these are all shows. These are outlets that I use, that I go to all the time. And I'm not trying to make this sound like a commercial or anything, but I think you really hit a good point there. There's not a whole heck of a lot of unity, I guess you would say, between all these outlets. I mean, we're, for the most part, the people that are a part of this, obviously, we're all very friendly with each other online. You know, we're not attacking each other. But beyond that, there's not a whole lot of cross-pollination. There's no, you know, we're not getting together. We're not working on projects together. And so this, even though it's still not us necessarily working together, it's nice to be all in one home, to have everything right there. And hopefully it does lead to more of that, more of this, you know, cross-pollination between everyone, you know, not so many people having to be out there, you know, I've got to get the views, I've got to get this story out before the other folks do. Camaraderie is something that is missing. It's something the right, unfortunately, has. They're all on the same page. And we need more of it here on the left. Not saying we have to agree on everything, not definitely not. But things like this that actually bring people together, that's important, and we need more of this, and we need more people to support it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, yeah, that's exactly how we think. As you said, yeah, a lot of us are friendly, but our outlets may not work together that often. And I am starting to see a little bit of collaboration happen because of our network, and we're working to provide more networking opportunities for the outlets, for the journalists, even for freelancers. You know, we think that independent media really is the most important side of the media world, and certainly has the steepest hill to climb in terms of getting our news in front of the most people. And so, we're not going to compete with CNN or Fox News or New York Times as, you know, atomized outlets. But if we kind of come together under one roof, like this app, which purely aggregates content, we embed a web browser, we embed YouTube, and we stream public podcasts. So we're not actually publishing anything. We're just putting it all in one system that's very sleek. It's easy to use. There's no creepy DMs. There's no hot takes. It's just, here's the news. Do what you want with it. You can post it on social, and we encourage that. But we just want kind of a clean experience, so you can open the app and maybe not have a wave of anxiety or start doom scrolling. You can read stuff. You can listen to stuff. You can watch stuff. You can actually read stuff while you're watching stuff. And so, you know, we hope that this can kind of be the beginning of you know, really a huge network, but also kind of a movement towards a diverse media ecosystem where people are getting the bigger picture of the news, and they're not sort of forced to consume messaging that is coming from, you know, major corporate outlets.
And, you know, it's a great way too for people to find new outlets that you may not otherwise have known existed. You know, I've actually been using Reddit Politics for the last few years as a big source, just because it pulls things from places you wouldn't ordinarily think to look. Places, honestly, I didn't know existed, and now I go to them every day. And this app is the same way. So hopefully it opens some people's eyes. Again, it's Opt Out News in the iOS App Store. And Alex, tell everybody where they can find you, social media, whatever you've got.
Great. Yep. I'm just Alex Koch, K-O-T-C-H, not Coke, Alex Koch on Twitter. And you can check out Opt Out, just optout.news is our website. There's a download link right there. And we have a list of all the outlets that are part of it right now. We have information about our charity, because we actually are a nonprofit charity, as opposed to sort of a for-profit tech company. I publish a lot at exposedbycmd.org, where you can find this report that we discussed. So we're also very open for feedback, user feedback, questions, comments, concerns. You can email us at support@optout.news. Take our newsletter survey if you sign up for a newsletter, et cetera. So there's a lot of ways to find us. And Farron, thank you so much for having me on to talk about both the climate report and Opt Out, of course.
I appreciate you joining us today. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
That's it for this week's free portion of the Ring of Fire podcast. But if you want to get the rest of the show, make sure you go to rofpodcast.com, sign up, become a member, because you don't want to miss out on fresh content every single week. Not to mention the fact that if you sign up and become a member, you get access to all of the Ring of Fire archives.